O U C H spells ouch.
I love this bit.
It's the best bit.
It's like retro techno, retro techno.
Hello, I'm Liz.
Can you hear me through the stratosphere? Hey, I'm Matt.
Matt's got off a plane about 6 hours ago. He's rather jet-lagged, so it could be an interesting month, I think.
I've had 2 hours sleep in the last 48.
And so welcome to this month's August 2009 Ouch Talk Show. It could be an interesting one.
It certainly will be. Hell, when are they not interesting, Liz?
We've got Rob Crossan is going to be bringing us some of the weirder disability news stories around, and we know disability can be pretty weird sometimes. He'll be with us in about 10 minutes.
Of course, our quiz game, Vegetable, 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 returns for another epic outing. I wonder what will be wrong with the caller on the line today.
OK, three blind people. No, that's wrong.
It's hysterical.
OK, three people. One blind, one deaf and one with Asperger's. Or is it Asperger's?
Asperger's?
Asperger's.
That's a little derogatory.
It's a little rude. OK,
Asperger's.
We'll find out that later. Never
Let's ask them.
OK, we'll be seeing if they have similar or widely differing opinions later in our new feature, the Ouch Roundtable.
Bull, bull, bull. I like the sound of that.
I know.
And we'll be playing out, of course, with a touch of this. Yeah, that's Lady MJ Warrior. Hear it in full and more about her inspirational story at the end of the show.
We're on the web, ouch, at bbc.co.uk. Go there, sign up to our weekly newsletter, be our mate on Facebook and read our latest articles updated every couple of days. It's authentic, Matt. Authentic.
Word.
Word on the street.
Well,
respect.
I've just been coming back. Yeah, I've done a lot of respect. Yeah.
Have you? Why?
Because I've been in New York. Yeah, the mean streets of New York. Yeah, New York. And you're like, say word, and then someone goes, word.
But, really?
Well, they did in like 1993, probably.
Did you do disability things when you were there?
Well, I was just saying to Damon, our producer, before we started, I had a remarkably undisabled 6 weeks. But then, of course, I was actually working at the sideshow in Coney Island.
Which is, by other name, is a freak show.
It is indeed. And there was me and another natural-born freak, as they're called in the business, a beautiful guy called Jason Black, young 23-year-old with ectrodapoly. Which is a cleft gene. So it'll either give you a cleft palate, cleft hands, cleft feet, all three, or some of the above.
And what's he got?
He's got the feet and the hands.
Nice.
Yeah, massive big pincer hands he's got. And a beautiful, beautiful spirit. So
we all have
okay.
that, don't we? We all have
He's got such courage. No, he's 23 and he's working his way through the sideshow business. And I think what I'm going to have to do, listeners, is send him a couple of books. You know, there's books that changed your life. One of mine was a book called Mustn't Grumble.
Okay.
From what, early 90s, Liz, was it?
Yep, I think it would
Anthology
be.
Anthology of short stories by disabled women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Life-changing for me, very much so. And I'm thinking, you know, he needs a couple of those sort of like...
But it might need more of like a lads mag approach.
Oh, no, he's a polite Texan from Austin.
Really?
He says yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, all the time.
Okay.
And I don't wish to be rude, but...
So were you like his sort of big brother, mentor,
well,
big friend,
unwitting,
you know, best friend?
I mean, he was looking up to me a little, and I was able to pass down a few, you know, showbiz tips. Don't turn your back on the audience, stuff like that, you know. Yeah, it was weird, really.
Well, it's good to
like
have
the
you
new
back.
One. It's lovely to be back in familiar territory.
Yeah.
No. Next to my favourite co-presenter.
Have you noticed anything different about me?
Liz, you're horribly disfigured, scarred, and really disturbing to look at. And you've got a badly bruised arm. No, let me describe it. Let me describe it. I'll do my best in audio description. From the right elbow to at least halfway along the right forearm is a nasty-looking tear, gash, bruise, scab thing.
It's weeping as well.
And it is a little effluent, it's true. I'm glistening in the studio lighting as it does. Don't move your arm like that. Oh, it's a light
Look
show.
Look at that. Oh, who needs a glitter ball?
So, come on, Liz, what happened? Were you brutally savaged?
I'm rehearsing a play at the moment, and I was on the stage, and there were two ramps to get off the stage, and I went to go off, and I missed the ramps, and I fell off the stage.
What?
Woohoo!
How tall off the floor was it?
Oh, it sounds a bit dramatic, doesn't it? It was about kind of not even a foot.
But that doesn't matter because...
But it was one of those, right, where... So my PA's in the room, the director's in the room, and my front wheel goes off. I realise I've missed the ramp, OK?
Oh,
I realise. And it's that sort of slow motion when you think, can I stop it? I knew it was happening. And it's like, oh, I might be able to... And I couldn't,
But did the chair fall on top of you? Because that could kill you.
Well, the chair sort of went one way, and I slipped out the chair onto the floor. But, okay, I'm not a woman with a lot of mobility, you've noticed.
Well,
right?
I mean, I'm surprised you didn't break anything, to be honest.
It is amazing. But apparently, when I fell on the floor, I did, like, a commando roll to save myself.
Wow.
I know.
You learnt a lot at Dollywood, didn't you?
I did.
Wow, you did, like, the whole... parachute fall, roll to the side thing.
I did a pratfall or whatever they call it. Yes, in the theatre, in it.
Damn.
It was very cool and amazing that I didn't do more damage. So that's what it is. So I apologise for that, but I want to keep it open to the air. It's lovely.
Well, listeners, if you're not too traumatised by that worrying news about our beloved Elizabeth, I've got something pretty exciting. Heather Mills tweets set to poetry.
Go on. Yeah, let's hear them.
No. I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
you can't
on,
have one now.
Just one.
Can I give him one line?
One line?
No. Apparently, I'm not. No,
oh,
we've got to.
Tease.
Listeners, you're going to have to actually sit through this program for a change. All right.
I want one.
I'm sure you do. Well, suffice to say, Heather Mills tweets are not just normal tweets. They're Heather Mills tweets.
This is going to be good.
Yeah. Stay tuned, okay, guys,
well,
girls.
We've been missing these for a while, but you know what? We're back with listeners' emails.
Oh, we haven't had those for ages since they were so boring we fell asleep.
I'd like kind of a little theme. Listeners' emails. Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Perhaps we could get Rob from Spaceships Are Cool to compose a sort of, it's your emails, it's your emails.
See, that would be, I like that.
Yeah, okay. Maybe. Rob, get it done, will you?
Actually,
no money, by the way. No money.
He's written in, actually.
What's he say?
Loving Matt's Auto Harp. Have you ever tried, seen, heard an Omnicord, electronic instrument version of Auto Harp type thingy made by Japanese company Suzuki?
Yeah, obviously, listeners, Rob, this emailer is the person who wrote the theme tune. Rob from Spaceships Are Cool. Yeah, well, Rob, I have. I checked it out on YouTube, an Omnicord, and it's a large plastic... a Japanese device that you press buttons and magical chords appear. And I'm actually going to buy one, and thanks very much for the tip.
But if you're listening to the theme tune wondering if there's one in there, no, he didn't manage to shoehorn in that particular instrument. Hey-ho. Melanie, thank you for writing. She says that I'm an absolute crip genius. Why, pray tell? She's managed to download the talk show from iTunes and play it in her specially adapted car. I must be the coolest crip in town, don't you think? Anyway, we have to agree legally and send her an Ouch mug so she can show off. So
great.
There you go.
See if you can drink tea at the same time. And
that's
it will be
something.
Cool. Now, we've got one here from somebody in Hawaii.
How's it signed off?
Worried in Waikiki.
OK, what does he say?
Well, it's quite long, but I'm going to go for it. Your show is great. I've just discovered it and have been listening to it as much as I can. I'm an American with a disability in Hawaii. However, my disability is of a progressive nature, and while I function largely normally for now, my physical condition is deteriorating. My disability is a bit like Parkinson's, so I'm facing a slow decline in function. Now, here's where it gets the problematic. The problem is, I have a girlfriend who knows I have a disability, but I don't think she understands how bad it will eventually get. So I'm looking for a humorous way to break the news to her that the man she fell in love with is falling apart. How do you keep love alive, though, Liz, in the face of a progressive disability? He doesn't want to lie to his girlfriend and pretend everything's normal, but he doesn't want to scare her off. He asks for help.
My goodness, we're like agony aunts and uncles now, aren't we?
Well, I don't know what to say other than that I would have thought ultimately honesty is probably going to be the best policy, isn't it?
Well, I guess so. It's an interesting one because I think she knows, and I think if you're honest, I think she's going to be cool. And if she doesn't, and she isn't, she's not worth it. Mm. That's the kind of rubbish advice they give normally.
I've got a further option.
Go on.
Take us to that famous rock where Elvis dived off in Fun in Acapulco.
Yeah.
And push her off it.
Okay.
She's going to break her spine. And then she'll be a wheelchair user. And whatever you disclose to her then is like light relief.
Maybe describe what some of the symptoms of Parkinson's are, which, as I understand it, one of them is a bit of a shaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she might like that kind of thing. It might enhance certain areas of their life.
Depending on what he's doing at the time.
Exactly.
All right,
there
so
could be a plus to it. See what I'm saying?
Yes, thank you. You're obsessed, woman, aren't you?
It's not all negative. Anyway, good luck with that one. A difficult one. Worried in Waikiki. Thank you for getting in touch.
Not sure about this next one, Liz.
It's not as weird as you think it is. Go on, read it out.
No, you do it. I read out the last one.
Okay. I'm writing in disgust at the service that you laughingly call dry cleaning. I put two jackets in at your Glenrothes branch. I paid £13.50 to have them cleaned. I went to pick them up and they've been completely destroyed. They were winter jackets. One was a reversible jacket and it cost me at least £45. The other jacket cost £14. I was told by the staff that they followed the instructions to the letter.
Sorry, what's this got to do with disability? Why has she emailed this in?
Well, have you not heard of the Ouch Dry Cleaning Service, Matt? Dry cleaning at ouch@bbc.co.uk. No?
I didn't know we did it.
Yeah, no, anyway. Great. Yeah, we do that. So anybody got any items they'd like to send in, don't send them to me.
Oh, I like this one. A nice short one-liner. They're better, listeners, believe me. Every time I listen to your show, I thank God I was born neither a woman nor a vegetarian.
Anonymous fan. Anonymous fan of what? I can't work out. Is that a compliment or
of
a...
Of Meat and Men.
Of Meat and Men.
There
wasn't
we
that
go.
A book?
Of
Meat and Men. I think I've read American that.
It's on the American Schools reading list, isn't it?
That's right. It's a classic. Steinbeck.
It is in Key West, anyway.
Another one. Could do with something I can listen to legitimately while at work, and I may just have found it. Cheers, Janine.
Doesn't say it's our programme, does it?
Thanks for letting us know. I'm a little concerned that possibly she's of the occupational terrorist therapist kind of variety.
Oh, I get it.
So listening
Hence
to us is like...
legitimised listening.
What do you think?
Oh, God. Well, if anybody here is listening to this at work... Are you guys actually informing social workers on how to do their job?
Maybe we're on the curriculum for social work training, occupational therapist training, that they have to listen to the Ouchpot. Do you think we teach them anything?
I don't know, but is occupational therapy, what am I trying to say? Ask. Is occupational therapy bad? Like, isn't it for people in prison who want to learn how to paint, like Paul McCartney? I don't know, sorry. Jet lag number two.
No, there was nowhere to go with that, Matt. Nowhere to go with that. No, I think occupational therapy has many different things, isn't it? But, you know, for disabled people, it can be that they get you a bit of equipment that helps. But normally they haven't got the money, so they give you something you don't really want. If you can do better than our responses, if you can send us fantastic emails like you have, thank you very much. Please do. You know where we are. We're at ouch@bbc.co.uk. You could win a memory stick, I know, or a mug, or whatever we've got left in our store cupboard.
Matt Raver. BBC.co.uk/ouch. Matt Raver. BBC.co.uk/ouch.
Oops. Yes, listeners, it's news time again, and the noises you can hear it are. Is Rob fumbling with his headphones. Poor man can't find the hole.
Pulling every plug. Oh, I see what you did there. Didn't like it, but thanks.
Rob Crossan, how the rutty heck are you?
Reasonable, thank you very much. Shall we get newsy? I've got some very good ones to
really?
Go.
Really? Yeah. Well, you've got a lot to share
eager.
With us.
But hold on, guys.
What?
I missed the whole Beyond Boundaries thing, and you two were there, and I want to hear about it just briefly. May I?
Well, I'll tell you what annoys me, and it actually links into the first story. My first story is about... an Alice Cooper gig where a guy with a prosthetic leg going by the name of Andrew Miller got so overexcited by the Alice Cooper gig, he took his prosthetic leg off and started waving it around. When the guy next to him complained, he retaliated by punching him in the face 10
with
times.
His leg.
No. I think the leg was continually getting waved just to attract Cooper's attention. But this is what annoys me. I mean, obviously, we missed something here at the Beyond Boundaries show in Farnborough. We didn't get any disabled people getting their prosthetic limbs.
No.
No, we didn't do any. We didn't arouse any excitement of that guy.
There wasn't a lot of stage dive.
No, there was maybe if we'd worn more makeup and played a bit of death metal.
Possibly screamed a bit more.
Yeah, then we might have got something. So
I think the bit we did was pretty good. We had a few quizzes, didn't we?
We had a few quizzes, yeah. We had DLA or no DLA. Oh, right.
See what we did there.
Yeah, no, I read about that on the website.
Yep, and we had Derek Paravicini.
Hey.
And Heavy Load, who were fantastic.
Jamming together by any chance?
No, not together. Though we should make that happen, shouldn't we, at some point.
So that's cool.
His version of any of their songs would
Heavy Derek.
Heavy Derek.
Derek
does head the load.
Well, we're going to be out again at the Liberty Festival, which is at the beginning of September, so we will be there live.
I'm a bit scared about that one. I mean, I don't mind Farnborough, but Trafalgar Square, I mean...
It's a bit public, isn't it?
I know.
Hello, London!
There's eight people there waving their prosthetic legs about.
Ideally. To a soundtrack of Alice Cooper.
So you bring up that story about the guy waving his leg. Were you upset by that? Were your sensibilities offended by him getting his bits out?
Well, I'm a bit offended by him retaliating by punching the guy 10 times in the face. That's slightly excessive. But no, I like the fact that, you know, they can get that overexcited. What do you mean? Disabled people, just like anybody else, we can show our excitement in whatever way we please. And let's face it, you're probably not going to do it at a Coldplay gig. Because I'm wondering, are there a higher proportion of disabled people at mega rock concerts like Alice Cooper than there
are? I'm not sure, because you go...
Bikers.
Really?
Bikers.
Hells Angels and Bikers. Were one of the first groups ever to have a disability wing were the Disabled Bikers Association. They like heavy metal and Alice Cooper. Mm. Pretty people who go to Coldplay, I'm going on one here, pretty safe, middle-class people,
and
less likely to lose a limb in their general lifestyle, I would have thought.
But you were saying, Rob, that
just
probably,
clearing that one up for
it's
you guys.
It's a sober explanation. Yeah.
It probably
wouldn't
happen at a Coldplay gig, but I don't know, maybe when they sing Yellow, you'd get your colostomy bag out.
Yay!
Nice!
Hey!
The payoff was worth it, wasn't
it? No, we got there in the end,
Okay. So, The Blind Might Save Your Life.
Unlikely.
What's this about?
Yeah, highly unlikely, but perhaps not. This is in Germany. It's the introduction of blind women who are being trained to detect breast cancer earlier and better than doctors. This is the discovery of a German gynecologist called Dr. Frank Hoffmann. Do you want me to do a poor German accent?
Yeah.
And I'll give you a
of course.
Okay, danke schön.
This is what we like.
We are turning disability into a gift, Dr. Hoffmann told CNN. It's like the game Battleship, yeah? You have the exact location. And, you know, I think that's a little bit flippant.
How do they
who
know?
Says the Germans don't have a sense of humour? Well, they do it by, apparently,
sniffing?
Because they have a better sense of touch.
Oh, touching.
They can detect things that normally sighted people can't detect. And what Dr. Hoffmann has done, he's created braille strips as a system of orientation, allowing the blind to carry out breast examinations. Now, what slightly confuses me about this is that he says that another advantage of having blind women is that they're able to dedicate more time to examining a patient. Presumably because they're blind, they're not doing anything else other than sort of looking for things that they've lost, you know, or reading braille, or I don't know. So slightly presumptuous, but I don't know. I mean, I would have thought that surely you'd need a bit more training in actually knowing what a good lump and a bad lump is in terms
perhaps
of
some medical training.
Maybe they're getting that too, but it's not entirely clear from the story.
So what's this? If in doubt, zap a learny.
Sounds
like a good policy.
Yeah, this is from a part of the world not usually known for its tolerance and understanding. Mobile, Alabama. And
yeehaw!
Indeed, yeah. And this is a story of Antonio Love, who he's got the mental capacity of a 10-year-old. Let's put it like that.
It's pretty good.
Not bad. Yeah, better than me or you
more
combined, I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And major stomach complaint, went off to the toilet one day in a department store, was in there for over an hour. Somebody wondered who on earth was in there. So obviously using restraint, compassion, understanding, what have you. The police came in, knocked on the door, then used a tire iron, whatever that is, to open the door. I don't know what it is, but it sounds brutal. Obviously, Antonio was a little bit scared by this, so pushed the door back to keep it shut. Officers then saw they had an umbrella in the toilet with him, so sprayed pepper spray through a crack in the door to subdue him. Then when they finally got inside, shot him with a taser. Superb. Obviously, they didn't realise that Love was deaf or had mental problems until he showed him a card he carries in his wallet. I presume he didn't do this until he came round from the pepper spray and the taser.
In A&E, probably.
And incredibly, the officer in charge of the police here in Mobile, Alabama, called Christopher Levi, said the officers were justified in using force against Love since he had an umbrella. We'll make whatever efforts we can to resolve this situation helpfully so this man will be able to trust police in the future so we can help him again. Obviously, it's going to be a tough road. again. Wow. Understatement being the order of the day here. But that's shocking. Have you ever had that? Police brutality for merely being disabled?
Being in a toilet.
Being in a toilet, yeah.
A stun gun when you use your radar key. I mean, what?
I mean, I suppose vegans or vegetarians, when they go to the toilet, do make a little bit more noise than other people. And it could be construed as, well, just ask Heather Mills and her new vegan restaurant, V-Bites. But more of that later, listeners.
Go on, are you going to do the Twitters?
No, not. I'm not going to do it yet.
Hang on a minute. Are you saying that Heather Mills has been complaining about vegetarians messing up the toilets?
No, there's one place where you wouldn't get complained about messing up the toilet.
Oh, I see.
It's at a place where everyone messes the toilet up. Okay, I've got a little bit offhand here. Sorry.
I think in terms of you were saying, Rob, about disabled people being beaten up and treated pretty badly, I think it's getting more and more common, isn't it? You were reading a story before, Matt.
I was in Discover, Cornwall's Disability Aware Lifestyle magazine, issue 8 for summer 09, has a very harrowing litany of examples of terrible abuse of disabled people, where they've basically been beaten and stabbed and killed and all sorts of things. And seems to be on the rise.
On the rise, and you don't seem to be really hearing about these, are we?
No.
No, not in the mainstream press, anyway.
No. It's like the comedy article at the end of the news.
Yeah. And finally,
in
Cornwall. Man in wheelchair stabbed. Anyway. Yeah.
The old drunk in charge of a wheelchair gag comes back to bite us, Rob. Not again, please.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've got a little bit of sympathy for this guy. He's called Francis Dessy. He lives in St Albans. He's pleaded guilty to driving his electric wheelchair drunkenly through the city centre. The reason being that he was told earlier in the day that one of his legs was about to be amputated. He responded by going out, in common parlance, on the lash. There's no taxis available after 5 p.m. apparently in St Albans that can cater for people in electric wheelchairs. So decided to wheel his way home and was caught with, 100 millilitres? No, 260 milligrams of alcohol, the legal limit being 107. The best bit about this was the magistrate fined Dessy £250 in costs and put 10 points on his driving licence, even though he doesn't have one as he can't drive a car.
But hold on, there's no law about being drunk in charge of your wheelchair.
Well, there is if you're endangering others, isn't there?
Oh, right. Have you been up that hill in St Albans?
Sadly, I've led a varied life, Matt, but I've never done that.
I have. I can't tell you why, but I used to visit St Albans occasionally. And it's one massive hill.
Why can't you tell us why?
Was it a brothel?
No, it wasn't a brothel.
No, it wasn't a brothel.
That's something we talk about on the BBC.
Sorry. It was not a brothel, OK? Rob, it's been great
seeing you
again.
Thank you for your potpourri of stories.
A potpourri.
Nice. Do you like that? It's summery.
It sounds a bit leafy and wimpy,
and
but
a bit bloom and feminine. Thanks for the six pack of info.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's more like it.
We'll see you next month.
Bye bye.
bbc.co.uk/ouch.
Now it's time for vegetable. A vegetable.
Pop down to the bottom of your garden. There, along with the hedgehogs, badgers, owls and stray cats, you'll find a little haven of diversity and health that Jamie Oliver would be proud of. Yes, a kitchen garden full of vegetables!
It's the disability quiz where we guess what's up with the person on the other end of the telephone line. Who have we got today? Hello, it's Phil in Stockton-on-Tees.
Hello.
Hi, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Hiya.
So, we can't ask you anything. You're from Stockton-on-Tees, and that's Middlesbrough area?
Yep, it's just over the river from Middlesbrough.
And what do you do up there?
I'm a volunteer.
A volunteer. If we ask you for what kind of organisation, will it give things away?
No.
What kind of organisation?
It's the Citizens Advice Bureau.
Ah, you're an advisory man.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
And tell me, where's the best vegan and vegetarian restaurant in Stockton-on-Tees?
I think there's one called The Waiting Room.
There is, you're right. It's a little bit like, it's a tiny bit like Heather Mills' one. But enough of that, and we'll more of that later.
Fair enough.
Oh, okay, go on.
No, I can't. Anyway, if you could tell us one fascinating thing about yourself that isn't at all impairment related, what would it be, Phil?
I've met the Queen and Tony Blair.
Wow.
And Postman Pat.
Oh. Which of the three was the most exciting?
Do you know, probably the Queen. I mean, Postman Pat was actually quite scary.
Yes.
And Tony Blair was a bit dull, so, yeah.
Dull, Mr Blair.
And what did she say to you?
The Queen?
Yes.
She actually gave me a bit of a fright. She's sort of... I didn't know she was there. It sort of appeared out of nowhere and grabbed hold of my hand. And
where were you? That's what I want to know.
Is she hiding in an alleyway and Stockton on tears?
Bill! Oh, I got you there!
St. James's Palace. I was in. But she just asked me what I do, the usual sort of question.
OK, well, that's rather a bombshell, and it's thrown us. But, well, onwards we must play with Vegetable, Vegetable or Vegetable. And it is a clever disability interpretation of the parlour game Animal, Vegetable or Mineral. In the game, the two hosts of the Ouch talk show have 90 seconds to guess what is wrong with a disabled caller on the line by asking a series of fiendishly intelligent questions. The caller must answer only yes or no. It is both classic and... it is both clanging onward, you do that. It is both classic and therapeutic.
To take part in this intrusive and unpleasant game, the rules clearly state you have to be disabled. Phil, are you disabled?
Yes.
90 seconds on the clock, please, and your time starts now.
Phil, when you met the Queen, did she shake your hand?
Yes.
Did she pat you on the head?
No.
Did she shake your foot?
No.
Do you have hands?
Yes.
And legs?
Yes.
Feet?
Yes.
Can you use them to walk?
Yes.
Are you mad?
No.
Are you... do you have learning difficulties?
No.
Do you have a neurological condition?
No.
Go on.
Wait, did you go to special school?
Yes.
Do you have arthritis?
No.
Do you use crutches?
No.
Spina bifida?
No.
Cerebral palsy?
No.
Diabetic?
No.
DVDs? Thing...
Which one, sir?
DVDs?
No.
That thing with your blood? Haemophiliac?
No.
Oh, we're doing quite well.
Muscular MS. Dystrophy. When he came up, which one was it?
MS.
MS.
Nope.
Muscular dystrophy.
No.
Parkinson's.
No.
God, I don't know anymore.
Robinson's.
No.
Oh. Blind.
Yes.
Are you blind?
But there is still more.
What? And deaf. Well, that would no.
Well,
no,
that's not going to work.
But
short-sighted.
Quite close with that.
What? And hard of hearing.
Yes.
Blind and
out
of hearing!
Is that it?
Yes.
Have we won?
We've done it!
No, have we won?
Hold on, we've done it! We've done it! We've done it! We've done it! We've done it!
Deaf, blind.
Deaf, blind.
Deaf, blind.
Yeah!
Deaf, blind. Deaf,
blind.
Deaf, blind.
Deaf,
blind. He's deaf, blind! Deaf, blind. Deaf, blind. Deaf, blind. Wouldn't that be great if you had that as your ringtone? Deaf, blind.
Then everyone would know.
Yeah.
Hold on, Liz. Sorry, Phil. This is obviously about you and not about us pathetically scraping glory from our second only win. Isn't that our second one ever?
I think so. Do you know what? On the script here, it says, OK, Phil, it's time for you to tell us what's wrong with you and put us out of our misery.
Well, there you go. I'm deaf, hard of hearing and blind.
However... although technically we won and you lost, I think it would be churlish and awful of us if we didn't at least offer you some sort of gift.
Okay, go on.
As call it not a prize, because we don't do those, obviously, but a consolation gift.
Thank you very much.
Shall we give him a consolation gift?
Yes.
What shall we give
him? It's
the
same as the normal prize, I think.
Shh, don't tell
me. Oh, no. maybe a mug or possibly one of those stick things.
Would you like a memory stick?
Please.
To help your memory walk along Stockton and Tees.
I think it would be useful.
So, Phil, when people find out that you're hard of hearing and blind, what questions do they normally ask you?
Oh, well, I get a lot of dull questions, like, how do you get around on your own, and why haven't you got a carer with you? You know, because I obviously can't walk down the street on my own.
But why haven't you? No, it's fine. Yes.
It's something I often wonder myself, you know. I've had things like, of little kids, they're much more interesting usually when they discover I'm blind. Because I had one come up to me with a painting one time, and she was like, look at my painting. I said, well, I can't, I'm blind, can you explain it to me? And she sort of paused for a bit, obviously fazed by this new information, and said, if I take you upstairs, can you see it then?
Hello.
Yeah, so to explain to the concept of blindness.
To which I hope you responded, excuse me, madam, I work for the Citizens Advice Bureau, and I have to remain professional.
At all times. So, Phil, thank you very much. We will have a memory stick sent out to you. And, I'm sorry, but we are quite thrilled both to meet you and to guess what's wrong with
you. I've actually already met you before, Liz.
Have you? Where? When?
Don't you remember?
It was in the Tate Modern. It was in a in this gallery shop with my fiancé.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's in a wheelchair. She ran into you.
That's right. I remember. It was that night of weird things, wasn't it? Was it a weird thingy?
You're in the Tate Modern, Liz.
Oh,
get
no,
real.
Tate
it's
Modern. This is true.
I was the good-looking blind person stood in the background watching and harangued you.
Who's that cackling in the background?
That's actually my fiancé.
I thought it might be.
Oh, well, lovely to meet you and lovely to have you on the show.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Phil.
Bye-bye. Take care, Phil. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So if you want to try and beat us at vegetable or vegetable or vegetable, yes.
As if you've got a chance.
As if you've got a chance. Email the show, ouch@bbc.co.uk. That's ouch@bbc.co.uk. And it could be you we're talking to next month.
If you've never seen a severely handicapped person trying to speak before, it can be a bit alarming.
So I spent 6 weeks in New York with Julie, my girlfriend.
And is this the first time you've lived together?
Yeah, this is was a preliminary attempt at cohabitation.
So you went on holiday?
No. Yeah, I was technically on holiday. And it was great. We got on really well and things are looking good in that respect. But her flat is not set up for anybody with short arms, of course. Why would it be? She shares the flat with another person of the long-armed variety.
Okay.
And everything was in the wrong place. And I experienced that nervousness that I haven't had now for, 17 years since the last time it happened to me, of kind of having to confront, guys, if you want me to do all the washing up, and I'm happy to, the draining board needs to not be under the thing that where I can't get to it. And all this kind of stuff. And I went through that whole, oh, my God, will she like me less because I need stuff? You know, that it's, you know, it boils down to that, doesn't it? And, of course, so I said, and I whacked my head on the corner of the bottom of the shelf unit so many times when I was bent over, as I am, when I'm doing the washing up. And I'm like, oh, God, it's really, you know, it's actually a little bit inaccessible, this kitchen, for me. But, no, it's fine. So the next morning I got there and she'd gaffer taped some foam rubber to the bottom of the, but a massive piece of foam rubber with really crudely done gaffer tape, which was both cute and inefficient. You know what I mean? It was, but
that is love.
Have you ever had that kind of, you know? Oh, watch. I mean, you're a lot better at asserting your disability needs.
You reckon?
I don't know.
You reckon? I think in terms of living with Joe, it's not so much about access because she moved into mine. That's a little bit different. But the thing to negotiate around and that reminds me of some similar stuff is that I have a PA. I have a 24-hour personal assistant. So I have somebody in the house anyway.
Yeah.
And then I have a partner in the house. And that kind of space thing, you know, it's only a two-bedroom place and one of them is taken up with the PA and then live it, you know. And that kind of who does the dishes? Right? Because I remember when we were first going out and she'd come round and she'd be like, no, let me cook. I'm not letting them cook for me. Well, that soon went out the window, you know, when you know that you've got someone who would cook for me because I can't cook for myself, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she does that. So that's sort of, you know, and I remember at the beginning, it's like, no, they'll just do your laundry, but not mine. I'll do my own laundry. And you're like, well, you know what? I'd kind of do your laundry sometimes, but you do it as well. You do both of ours. So it's that negotiating, and I had never experienced anything like it because I'd always lived on my own. So you know,
I mean, as it happens, of course, you know, I mean, most people who go out with a disabled person, big shock and surprise, listeners, have already thought that this might happen, you know, because it's part of their whole mindset, isn't it? So, of course, once I'd alerted it to it, suddenly glasses were appearing on the bottom shelves and not at the super top. And, you know, she'd obviously gone round and thought, right. And she'd done that, obviously tucked her arms in and thought, right, what can't I reach? And you know, she'd done that. I found it very cute, to be honest.
Did she gaffer tape her arms?
No, so she didn't go the whole way.
Oh,
no.
OK. Well, that's not really...
There would have been carnage.
The kind of commitment thing I was looking for, you know.
No, but I mean, it was very nice and... It's working out. It's very profound, you know, staying in New York and all of that. But the most profound part for me is, you know, learning to live and love again, listeners. That sounds like a Bette Midler song about to happen. And did you ever know, Liz, that you're my hero?
Why, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, I did see her recently.
Bette Midler.
I went to see her in concert.
What was it like?
She was incredible.
Was there a cripple enclosure?
Well... the seating was great. It was in Vegas and the seating was fantastic.
Oh, it was in Vegas, yes. Of course, sorry.
No, I was out
Not
there
Croydon.
Working. Oh. I was out there working. Honestly, I was. But she does a whole thing in a wheelchair as a mermaid. Have you heard of this?
No.
It is the most incredible thing I have ever seen. Right, so it's a whole... The show is called Showgirls, right? So it has all the typical showgirls with the feathers and the, you know, and the long legs and the heels and all that. So everything that, you know, I'm not kind of thing.
Right.
But she does one thing where she's a mermaid. So she has her legs and the mermaid thing. She can't walk. So she comes out in a dazzling pink and sparkly wheelchair, right? So she does her first thing in that. Then another 18 of these dancers in identical wheelchairs come out and do a lineup, a showgirl lineup, where they're just, instead of kicking their legs up, they're kicking their fins up.
Their big flipper fins.
Absolutely synchronised. It was brilliant. And to see that kind of, you know, wheelchair dancing was just
and in an amazing Julie Bette Midler wheelchair mermaid back thing. One of the jobs that Julie has is she works as a professional mermaid at the New York Aquarium and swims in the northern fur seal tank, where they've got side windows. And at 1:15 every day, all the kids are collected and they all stand by the side. And Julie and a couple of other girls dive down completely just as mermaids and swim and wave. And then, of course, they get out to meet and greet the kids, and they're pushed round
in wheelchairs
by staff. And it's a very cool thing.
I mean, it is, isn't it? Because mermaids are so glamorous and so exciting.
And are they glamming the wheelchair, like pimping the ride?
I think they are. I think that the whole experience, and I never thought that, you know, being a mermaid, I guess, is kind of like an impairment. It's like a condition, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if in the sea, you know, we're impaired. On land, it's the mermaid who's disabled.
See? And never realised. Mm. Never realised all these acting. I wanted to talk to you about it's something that's been on the Ouch homepage a little bit, and so it's been covered on Ouch. And this is about an actor who is a disabled guy who has CP, and that's relevant, and is called Jamie Bedard. And he has a part in the West End theatre show of Carrie's War at the moment.
Okay, well, Carrie, I know Jamie, and it's funny because I actually auditioned for the part that he... I can't remember the name. It's a funny name, like Mr. Silly or Mr. Wobbles or Funny Man. It's something like that.
And the character, it's
Johnny Go-to-Bed, apparently.
Okay.
When I read the script, I thought, oh, this should go to somebody with CP, because what they're describing is basically some of the speech difference that's really like CP. and I was like,
to do that?
No, I didn't spack up.
You did that.
No, I just affected my speech a little bit. I was rubbish at it.
And you wonder why you didn't get the part.
I know. Old Bedard walks in, wobbles away with the part, doesn't he, Nan? Anyway, but no, they did it for a TV thing with Pauline Quirk.
Okay.
But I didn't know that it had gone to a play, let alone at the West End. So there's a... Hold on a minute. Spastic and the West End alert.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I know. One of ours there.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
He might be up for an Olivier Award.
Can you imagine? No, of
Which
course
theatre
not.
Is it? It's a West End theatre.
I don't know. I've seen it. It's on Shaftesbury Avenue.
What will all those poor Japanese and American tourists think?
They'll think he's an actor.
They'll be waiting outside the stage door to give him one of their accolades of actoring.
But look, this is what I wanted to talk to you about, right? Because following the publicity of him being in this role, there's been a lot of press, and he's written on it, people have written on it, about how, you know, disabled people should be playing disabled roles and disabled characters. Something we've been hearing for years and years. Okay, my question to you is, why is that any different than, say, I saw the film Milk earlier this year, right, that was about Harvey Milk, the gay activist.
Played by the straight actor, Sean Penn. Yeah.
Fantastic film, fantastic job.
Well.
Yeah. Why is it any different?
Ricky Beadle Blair, the famous black activist-y kind of actor, writer, said exactly the same thing to me angrily. He said, anybody should be able to play anybody. To which I retorted, yes, when there's a level playing field, indeed they should. I should be able to black up. You should be able to play a straight woman, blah, 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 blah. But the difference is that there aren't any good parts for disabled people. They're usually written badly by an ill-informed, non-disabled person, usually. It is changing slowly. And on the rare occasions when there is a disabled character, it's nearly always played by a non-disabled person. The ratio of access and deprivation is far higher in this. And I think that once we get to a similar playing field in terms of gay representation, then we can start having that conversation. But I don't think we're ready for it for another 10 years. I sound all militant, I know.
But do you think that some of the portrayals, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis as Christy Brown in My Left Foot, you know, good old, what's his face, in 4th of July, what's his name, Tom Cruise. Yeah, so playing, what about in those situations where somebody is playing a character where they've become disabled? Right, so then, what do you do then?
Myself and David Kent and Andrew McClay all played people who pretended to be normal before the accident for the flashback scene. So, you know, it can be done the other way as well. That's the oldest excuse. Oh, we need it for the first scene before the accident. I don't know, it just feeds into that whole sort of... I don't think there's anything more special about playing a wheelchair user if you walk than playing somebody from South Carolina if you're from Birmingham. I don't think you deserve an Oscar anymore. And yet, statistically, statistically, if you want to get an Oscar, you play a cripple. But maybe I'm in too close and I can't see it.
I was going to say, if you're in that industry, maybe there's that little bit of feeling of, well, we're not getting those roles, so it should be fairer. We're not given the chance. But then, you know, you can see portrayals and there's a film about to come out and I can't remember the name. Adam, which is about a guy with Asperger's syndrome.
Oh.
And it's a mainstream film and apparently it's really, really good. And the lovely Lawrence Carter Long.
That's right, from Dis This. Yeah, in New York.
A disabled guy who's an expert, a commentator on film. He's given it his seal of approval. And I was talking to him about some of the reasons for that. And he was saying that, it may be that it's just an excellent portrayal. And sometimes maybe some people with certain conditions aren't suited to playing those roles.
Well, as my brother says, who I don't know if I'm allowed to name names, and I'll say it once, and then if I'm not, I'll just say it more ambiguously. He has a real problem with four puffs and a piano. Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple of my more militant gay friends do as well, and I'm like, what? You know, you have to liberate the word by making it fun and making it not oppressive. And it's like, how would you feel about four spastics and a piano? Mm-hmm. And I thought, not as good, to be honest. And he's like, yeah. So see what it's like for you,
Heather.
Lucky Heather, the one thing I'm never given when the people who are selling the Lucky Heather icon passed and they shield their face, don't they, from the evil spirits.
They run away.
Yes.
What is this?
Basically, Heather, our lovely ex, Mrs. McCartney, Heather Mills, figurehead of Viva, a vegetarian organisation to which I am an organisational member, has been tweeting her little heart out. Twiddly-twiddly-tweet, she's been going, and... it's rather poetic, and I thought maybe we could frame it. And if you would permit me, Liz, I could, in a poetic delivery, recite some of her twitting.
Is this from Twitter?
Ah.
Oh, it's ready.
Let me give you a few. Novelists try to keep a distance from journalists, as novelists are trying to write the truth, and journalists are trying to write fiction. V-Bites... that's the vegetarian restaurant that she's running, print lessons, is now my second home. Still here drilling, cool music, amazing seaside sunset, but I smell like the bottom of a budgie's birdcage.
Oh.
You move on and look at yourself and answer only to your own conscience. When you're hooting with the owls and you have to move your bowels, fill in the ending. Use your imagination.
Oh, wow.
12 hours cleaning. More and more cleaning. Inspiration. If you can imagine it, you can achieve it. If you can dream it, you can become it.
I'm inspired. Carry on. More.
Self-pity is our worst enemy, and if we yield to it, we can never do anything wise in this world. Fly back Monday to prepare for my cooking demo on this morning, Tuesday, 14th of July. Tune in if you can with Phil and Fern. Thai chicken. Vegan in brackets.
Fern.
I am so amazed how many people are coming to eat vegan and coming back every day. Amazed! One person said his poop was huge and healthy. We are indeed much more than what we eat, but what we eat can nevertheless help us to be much more than what we are. Think before you eat.
Can you just stop now?
One more.
Please.
One more. Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. And finally... can I reiterate for the gullible that believe lies in the press? I have never said I hope anyone dies of cancer, ever.
I was swaying. Do you not feel the need to?
I was swaying as
well. It was beautiful.
I just want to, just as a proud and conscious vegetarian, I think she's a real inspiration.
For who?
Herself. Little... Did they have a son or a daughter?
I don't know.
Little Maca.
But thank you. I was desperate to hear that, and now I'm quite emotional.
So, listeners, if you are inspired by Heather Mills' tweeting and twitting, check it out.
Matt Razor. Listener. bbc.co.uk/ouch.
Right, well, we're going to do a round table kind of thing now on Ouch, aren't we, Liz? We've got three beautiful people in the studio with us. Our very own Emma Tracy.
Hello.
Who, listeners will be aware, is our assistant producer, amongst her many other talents. And you, I believe, are blind, aren't you?
Yes, can't see a thing.
But it's just part of the big makeup that's beautiful, Emma.
It's only part of me, yeah. Doesn't take over my life.
And across from me is a very good-looking young gentleman called Mr. Charles Swinburne.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. Now, there's a whistling going on. Is that anything to do with your funny ears?
Yeah, my very funny digital hearing aids.
Ah, good. And who's this in the beautiful hat with the rose?
Oh, thank you. My name is Robin, and I have Asperger's syndrome, and I'm a specialist Asperger's syndrome trainer, and I'm a mentor to young people, and I also blog for the National Autistic Society.
Over to you, Liz.
And we want to know your different views because of your different impairments, your different takes on life. We wanted to talk a bit about technology and how important it is to you. Emma, as a blind person, what is it that you couldn't live without?
Oh, well, I couldn't live without my netbook, which is a little small laptop, which I take everywhere with me. And it's my book player. It's all the usual email and stuff. But also it's... If I need to get directions or anything like that, I can't get the map out, or, you know, lots and lots of things that you would just look up a book or, you know, check the paper or something. I need my little netbook for, so it's never far from my side. But everything in my house talks as well. It's just gadgets everywhere. And you'll find that blind people have a huge affinity with specialist blindy gadgets that just talk and like braille and all that stuff.
So what talks in your house?
My digital radio, it says, you're listening to BBC Radio 1 when I turn it on. So because with the old FM radio, they had the wheel that you just twisted around, so you knew whereabouts on the band that everything was. But with a digital, it's just sort of a menu, so you need it to talk. So that talks. My bathroom and kitchen scales talk. My microwave talks. I've got a talking measuring jug. Everything, honestly,
and
talks.
And you know the different voices for them, of course, because if everything was going off at the same time.
Do they all sound like Stephen Hawking, or have they all got their own personalities?
Well, no, a lot of them don't say too many different things. So what they've done is they've gotten some human somewhere to say all these different words, and they, you know, so they use a human voice. So my radio... I've heard from some blind men that my radio's voice is actually quite sexy. It's a female voice.
How many blind men have you had in your bedroom?
They have one of their own, Matt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
No, but so some are human and some are sort of... A lot of them come from the same company. So they, you know, the original sort of talking gadget manufacturer, I think they're Cobalt or something like that. And they are... Please step off, my bathroom scale says, and it says, your weight is... So it's a very, very posh English guy.
Oh, see, your house is full of talking things. Charlie, what about your home? What gadgets have you got there?
Well, the thing I've always worn my hearing aids, and obviously without those, I don't hear anything. I take them off at night, but the rest of the time, they're kind of the thing through which I hear the whole world. But at the moment, I've got a seven-month-old baby, and myself and my partner, we're both deaf. So, we have like a buzzer that alerts us to her crying. And that also works for the doorbell and the smoke alarm. So, yeah, we're just kind of just integrating the buzzer into our lives at the moment.
Is it done on a kind of Wi-Fi radio signal so that you don't know when the buzzer goes, whether it's the door, the baby, or the toaster?
Yeah, so luckily it's got little kind of images on it, so whichever you kind of you quickly grab it and try and work out what it is. But no one ever calls for us. We just moved house, so no one's ever at the door, so it's pretty much always the baby, unless the toaster's on or something.
But it's one handheld thing. It isn't like you've got different lights all over the house or
no, luckily
things.
It's just a little buzzer. So, it's like wearing a pager or something. And that's pretty vital. Otherwise, you'd just be up and down stairs all the time.
What about you, Robin?
Well,
Actually, it's not so much my home, it's what I carry with me. I have an iPhone, which is really, I think it's really revolutionised my life since I got it.
Wow.
Well, Asperger's syndrome affects people in lots of different ways, but one of the ways in which it can affect people is that they can be very sensorily hypersensitive, so you can be really over aware of the sounds and sights and smells around you, and particularly with sound, being able to listen to music if you're in a particularly stressful situation where there's a lot of sound and it's difficult to filter out what's happening and what type of information you actually need to take in, it's very useful. So for example, coming out of the tube Oxford Circus, it's very useful for that. Also, it has a map, has GPS, so I can always find out where I am. It allows me to be constantly connected to the internet and thus email, and phone people if I need help, which is quite regularly.
Wow.
So it has everything in this one thing.
Exactly, yeah, that's what's so great about it.
And how recent is this? Because a lot of these changes seem to be fairly, the last couple of years, there's a lot changed.
I've only had it since February, but I think the main thing is that... I'm dyslexic as well. I have lots of things. it's very useful to be able to email people and have emails, have written information that can be read to me on the move, whereas otherwise I would have to be at my computer and have it read to me.
So, Robin, do you use the voiceover on the iPhone then? Do you actually use the speech on the iPhone? See, I'm talking about talking things again.
I have done. I find most people that email me, I manage, but for emails that I'm writing, it would be useful. I'm not sure. I haven't made it do that, but I've had it read things to me.
I suppose for me, it's mostly music technology. As a musician that could never actually finger the chords or play the guitar or actually work the instrument, being able to work the electronic version and program the correct playing of, because I can hear the tunes in my head, and now I can get them out. So that's how it's liberated me. Liz, which technology has particularly liberated you?
Why are you smiling there?
Because I want to know the answer, good friend.
Well, I mean, other than things like your electric wheelchair and that kind of technology, technology,
sorry,
obviously.
Sorry, I've taken that as a granted,
yeah, but I mean, they've got smaller and, you know, you can have smaller chairs that you can cart around much more easily, that kind of thing. I think otherwise it's email. I think the internet, I don't know how we coped without that in terms of finding out whether places are accessible, you know, contact details. If you're travelling, finding out, you know, sharing people's experiences who've been to different places. There's still a lot lacking, but there's so much available on you know, on email and on internet. So I think for me, that's it. But I'm intrigued about this GPS as being a useful thing. So is this, if you're somewhere, Emma, and you want to get, say, to work, you can put in where you are, where you want to be, and it will direct you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as Robin said, she's got a GPS on her iPhone.
Yeah.
But I actually... There are specialist GPSs for blind people, and I'm actually trying to find the one for me at the moment. And I don't know which of you were there when Peter White was in talking about the new one that was being invented that you put on your guide dog harness and it vibrates each side of the harness for which way you're supposed to go. But yeah, basically, for one thing, you can sit in your house and, like, you would take the map out and map out your journey and decide what you're going to do and where and find places of interest then on the internet or whatever. With these new GPS thingamabobs, which are like over £1,000, so they're ridiculously expensive, you can go through the journey. You can find the places of interest you need to. But it says things like it's for a blind person, so it'll say, kind of, I'm not sure if it goes as far as up curbs and down curbs, which is blindy language for step up and step down when you're crossing the road. But it does say, you know, intersection, and it'll say what type of crossing it is, which is very important for a blind person because, you know, if it beeps, great. But if it doesn't, you have to figure out the traffic flow and stuff like that. So if you know that in advance, that's quite helpful. I think they could be revolutionary. Mm. Because I'm going to babble a wee bit, but before I got my dog, I wasn't mobile enough to kind of want one because I'd get a taxi if I was even slightly unsure of where I was going. But now that I have the dog and that I would go out not even knowing exactly where I was going, then I think GPS would be really, really handy. But as I said, this lot of blindy gadgetry is so expensive that unless you can be funded for it or get a business case for it, whatever, if you're working, it's almost out of your reach, which means that there are things that are essential and really, really good for blind people, but they can't actually afford them. But that's just my little soapbox moment.
OK, as you step down from aforementioned soapbox, quite rightfully having asserted your opinion, Emma, it seems only right that I should remind all listeners about access to work. If you can prove that you need it for your work because you're disabled, you can get them to pay for it. Anyway.
Now, well, you can ask them to pay.
You can ask them. Yes, and they might. You never know. Robin, you know the cliché, don't you? The cliché is that people with Asperger's are obsessed with computers and hacking.
Mm.
Are you a computer hacker?
No, and I'm not that obsessed with computers anymore either. Well, I was very interested in computers, but I wasn't interested in hacking. I was interested in networking and how computers worked together, but not from an internet stance and not really server-side. I was just interested in learning about, for example, network topologies. Like, there's lots of different shapes of network topology. Like, there's the mesh topology and, you know, things like that. That really interested me, collecting lots of information about a very small amount of topic. But I was never really interested.
You don't mean a chocolate bar, do you?
No.
Okay, sorry. I was thinking, like, that is the weirdest way of eating chocolate I've ever heard. Okay, sorry.
I was interested in computers, and then as I grew up, I got interested in art and other things.
But is it true? Are people with Asperger's more interested in computing? Or like, you know, is it a technology that they enjoy using that's easy for them to use? And is that why and where the stereotype has come from?
I think the figure is 500,000 people within the UK with an autistic spectrum disorder. You know, that's a lot of people, and they're not all interested in computers. People with autism can find computer technology very easy, particularly people who aren't able to speak or are nonverbal. They can use technology, like, for example, the iPhone now has an app which has been developed which enables people who are unable to speak to press a button and the iPhone speaks for you. So those types of technologies can be very useful, but they're very recent advancements. But people with Asperger's are interested in lots of different things. And I work, I mentor 7 clients, and only one of them is really interested in technology, and one of them totally hates it and doesn't have a computer or email.
Well, thank you, everybody, for contributing in this discussion. Robin, Charlie, Emma, thank you so much.
Here ends the talk show for August 2009. Production team today were Damon Rose, Emma Tracy, Clarissa Maycock, Simon McPhillips and Alison Craig.
Unsigned Artist Time. This month it's Birmingham-based singer, rapper, writer and MC Lady MJ Warrior. She received a serious head injury in February 2006, which has led to her having regular daily seizures. But interestingly, she never has them while performing.
Lady MJ says that the track we're about to play expresses how she feels about being a performer with a hidden disability. To go to more of her work and to read her story, go to myspace.com/TheLadyMJ.
This is Nothing Stops the Warrior. See you next month.
Boom!